You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another very happy post-game edition of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, with Sports Talk 790. Today's show is brought to you courtesy of our friends at SeatGeek. Download their mobile app and use the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase. So today's show, Rockets just polished off an enormous 132-98 win over the Sacramento Kings. I'm joined today by Salman Ali, regular guest on the show, host of RedNationHoops.com. Salman, welcome back.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. It's always nice to have a stress-free win, although this was a little different. Obviously, the Kings, they rested DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, and Ben McLemore out with injuries. And I know you said during the game that at one point you were just laughing with basically what the Kings were throwing out there, especially on the defensive end of the court. Did you learn anything about the Rockets tonight? What are your main takeaways from this game?
The Rockets are really good. Better than I thought they would ever be at the beginning of the season. And that's not an exaggeration. I've been on your show and I said they would top out around 50 wins, right? Like, I didn't think they'd win that many games. And right now they're on pace for like a 59, maybe even 60 game record. And that's just mind blowing to me. They're on an 8-game winning streak. Started off the season damn well without Patrick Beverley, and now with Patrick Beverley, they've just taken off. Like, if you look at the roster 1 through 10, they don't have any bad players, and that's kind of like bizarre to say for a team that's this good and that they managed to still be this deep. It's amazing. I mean, it's incredible.
This homestand has been something else. They did have the one game in Oklahoma City in the middle of it. But when they came back from the road trip at 13-7, we knew, you know, at a 650 clip, and hell, now they're over a 700 clip. They're actually on almost a 60-win pace after tonight, now 19-7 after their eighth straight win. But after that road trip, they were 13-7. We knew it was a feel-good story, and so a lot of us pointed out that, hey, they went 13-7 against the second toughest schedule in the NBA with 14-20 on the road. So what's going to happen when they come home? And, of course, you know, we all said, well, if they continue this pace, good God, what if they won 15 or 16 in the next 20? But so far, I mean, they've won 6 in a row since that road trip. And the thing that's amazing, you know, they've taken care of business against the teams that they clearly have overmatched. They beat the Mavs by 20, and they beat the Kings and Lakers by, I can't remember the exact final margin of the Lakers game, but basically you consider both of those 30-plus point games with how the Rockets... Actually, yeah, they won by 39. So, yeah, both of them, they won by over 30. So the teams they should crush, they've been out there and absolutely crushed. And even on games that they haven't played that well, the Celtics and the Nets games come to mind, they found ways to make plays late. So it's kind of like, I don't know, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but... if you can actually take care of business and get the 30-point wins, which is something they did not do a year ago, then all of a sudden all it takes is a couple of bounces to go your way, like the Celtics and the Brooklyn games, and you can win. I mean, you can go on a long winning streak, like the 8-game win streak they're on now.
Yeah, and this game was really huge for the Rockets because this is kind of the definition of a trap game. You know, DeMarcus Cousins sits out. You're at home. Rudy Gay's not playing either. And as we know, the Kings without DeMarcus Cousins are absolute garbage, right? Like, especially offensively. He has the highest usage rating of any player in the NBA, DeMarcus Cousins. The Kings rely on him so much on that end of the floor. And the Kings are already a bad offensive, bad defensive team. And so the Rockets managed to still take advantage of that and not only beat them, but rout them in spectacular fashion. I just think it was a good character win for the Rockets. And, especially after that last game in Brooklyn, which I would classify as a bad win. They came in here and they took care of business, and there's something to be said for that.
Yeah.
They haven't really had a bad loss since that first Lakers game that I could think of.
Yeah, I mean, I really thought Matt Moore hit the nail on the head, great writer for CBSSports.com. He ranked the Rockets number one in his power rankings. I know a lot of our fans saw it, and, you know, are they the best team in the league? I don't know about that, but at the same time, when you look at their resume, it's as good a resume as there is in the entire league. When you look at the margin of victory, the teams they've beaten, it's just a great combination of what they've done through 26 games of this year. And turning to this game tonight specifically, you know, Pat Beverly was 4 of 9, Eric Gordon was 3 of 12. Actually, that was pretty awesome that Eric Gordon picked this game to have a cold night. You know, he's been so hot for so long, and now, you know, he finally has a 25% shooting night. It doesn't matter. But outside of Beverly and Gordon, every Rocket in the rotation shot better than 50% from the field. Harden had a triple-double, 15 points, 14 assists, 11 rebounds, on just 7 shots. He was 4 of 7, so he didn't have to expend that much energy. Harden just 4 of 4 from the line because he didn't take the beating he normally does. But Clint Capella, 7 of 10. Anderson, 8 of 12. Trevor Ariza, 6 of 9. Sam Decker off the bench, 8 of 10. Montrezl Harrell, 4 of 6. There's a lot of ways you could go for this game, and certainly the Kings without Cousins and Gay were overmatched. But the biggest takeaway individually I had, well, besides Sam Decker, we talked about him before, but I loved seeing Ryan Anderson get going. Yes, he was 4 of 7 from 3, but that he was also, I believe, 4 of 5 from inside the arc, had 6 rebounds in his 26 minutes. And I never bought into, you know, Ryan had this funky start to the year. Like a week ago, I posted his splits, and he was shooting like 48% from 3 on the road, but only like 24% at Toyota Center. And of course, that's a small sample size, blah, blah, blah. But there is such a thing as momentum. There is such a thing as feeling comfortable. And so to me, this past week, it feels like Ryan Anderson is getting more comfortable at Toyota Center. And that can only be, you know, a good thing for the Rockets as a whole, because remember, he came off a pretty strong game against Brooklyn as well.
Yeah, and I think for shooters as good as Ryan Anderson, I don't think it really matters if you're on the road or away. All that stuff balances out at the end of the season because he's just that damn good at shooting the basketball. He's among probably the best shooting bigs in the NBA, and you can't really deny him of that. And it's only been 26 games now. So, I mean, at the end of the season, all that stuff balances out. I was never worried about Rhino. You know, the big story with him is what can he do, you know, with the basketball in his hands, like off the dribble and whatnot. And he still hasn't found that stride yet. But again, the Rockets brought him in just to shoot the basketball, and he's done that at a high clip. And I think you can't really complain with his play so far.
Yeah, and the other individual I should point out, Pat Beverly, noted that he was just 4 of 9 from the field. Just 4 of 9, because when the team shoots 59%, it stands out a little bit. But Beverly was actually a team best plus 31 in his 29 minutes. 10 points, 7 assists. Another strong game for him. Rockets are now 13-2, I believe, since he returned. So yeah, it's been a phenomenal run for the Rockets once Pat Beverly has returned. Clearly gives them a lift defensively. More than anything, he gives them a lift with that second unit. Without James Harden, he's really stabilized that. The last individual I want to point out is Sam Decker. I noted his line earlier, 19 points, 8 of 10 shooting, 7 rebounds. Yes, he was 2 of 3, but that also tells you that he was 6 of 7 from inside the arc. And it feels like to me that with each week, he's getting to be a better finisher. You know, to start the year, he started getting playing time, and you know, he kind of earned a rotation spot because I think he was a better-than-expected three-point shooter. And so that always buys you a longer leash, especially with Mike D'Antoni. But lately, you know, it seems the more he gets used to physical contact, the more he gets used to the NBA level, the better he's making decisions inside, I would say. He's finishing through traffic better. He's also getting a better sense for when to pass. And it just really feels like to me that Sam Decker continues to improve, you know, every week or two of the year. And that's a really encouraging thing, given his age and given that he's basically just a rookie.
Yeah, I think we talked about him on the last show you brought me on. Sam Decker's really good. And I think he's getting to where he's like probably a starter-level player that's playing on the bench at this point, because that's just how good he's been. He's so smart, and he knows where to be, when to be there, especially on the offensive glass tonight. He really crashed the boards hard. You saw him get in there for some second-chance opportunities. And you're right, he's finishing well around the basket, and he's shooting better at the three-point line than I ever could have expected him to shoot. I think he's still shooting around that 40% clip, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And if you can shoot at that level and still finish around the paint at that level, I mean, you're you have the makings of a really special player, especially at his length defensively. His length makes up for so much, and he's, you know, he's a positive on that end of the floor too, which I'm really surprised of, because he's basically a rookie, and rookies typically aren't good defenders, but that doesn't seem to be the case with Sam Dekker.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm really impressed. He's a starter level player playing on the bench at this point, and I feel no sympathy saying that. I truly mean that when I say that.
Yeah, and I remember the debate with you and Paul before the year about Dekker and potentially defense being a liability, and I tended to agree with that as well, but boy, it has not been a liability so far. It seems like he's getting, you know, as we said, just more confident. That's the word I would come up with for Sam. It's not just a matter of the technique. It's a matter of he continues to adjust, and with each game that he plays, if you go back and watch his film from the first couple of weeks, you can see a guy who's trying to feel his way against NBA competition. And right now, you put him in, he seems like a guy who's right at home. And hell, tonight against an overmatched opponent in the Kings, I mean, he knew he was better than the guys he was lined up against, and he just went straight to the rim and took advantage. I'll get back to that in just a couple of moments. We'll talk a little bit more about the Rockets bench, and one thing I think you might be a little more pessimistic about, which is the Rockets center rotation. We've seen some kinks there, and in the week ahead, the Rockets are going to see some tougher matchups, unfortunately, than the Sacramento Kings. For now, I do want to break and acknowledge our great sponsors at SeatGeek. Because right now, the NBA season is back, the Rockets are in the middle of a long stretch of home games, and SeatGeek is a great place to buy tickets. One thing I always say, if you're a fan like me for the Rockets or for the Astros, because I buy secondary tickets for the Astros a lot as a fan, don't have to for the Rockets, thankfully, because I have my credential, but I love seeing the Rockets or the Astros against a team that's not so good, because, well, it makes it easier to get tickets. And when you go to those secondary ticket sites, if you just want to see the Rockets, a game like Friday night against the Pelicans, that's a great chance to do it. SeatGeek, they back every ticket 100%. They do all the price comparisons for you with multiple ticket sites, so you know you're getting the best bang for your buck. Now, to get your $20 rebate on tickets, which you get courtesy of being a listener on this show, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. As you mentioned, you can also do that at their website, SeatGeek.com, as well. Just remember, download that SeatGeek app or go to the website and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show with Salman Ali, managing editor of RedNationHoops.com, we spent the first 10 minutes just breaking down a route, 132-98, Rockets over the Kings on Wednesday night, now 19-7, eight consecutive wins. Really don't want to talk too much about it because, well, there's not a ton you can take away. The Kings obviously were overmatched. They're not as good as the Rockets to begin with, and especially not without DeMarcus Cousins, Rudy Gay, and Ben McLemore. Spinning it forward, yes, the Rockets have won eight games in a row. That's great. If there's one thing you could nitpick in this, it's been the center rotation. And Salman, I thought you were a good guest for this topic because I know you have heated opinions. Clint Capella's clearly had some regression. He's, you know, there's a reason he's not playing 30 to 35 minutes like he was a couple of weeks ago. And against Brook Lopez on Monday night was clearly struggling. And so the Rockets went to Nene down the stretch. And we're also seeing them get into Montrezl Harrell a little more as well. But you, during the game on Monday, you had some interesting things to say about Nene, and I noticed as well. Now, Nene did make a couple of nice defensive plays in the final minute, but aside from that, even if Nene is a little bit stronger, he still reached. He committed some dumb fouls, and the sense I get from you, and I do agree to a point, is that you'd almost rather ride Capella out, you know, kind of get through whatever this slump is, whatever this down period is, rather than give excessive minutes to Nene. So A, is that a fair characterization? And B, you know, what do you think the issues are for Clint Capella as the Rockets embark on a stretch? You know, Saturday they've got Towns in Minnesota. You've also got the Spurs next week with Aldridge and Gasol, and then you have Memphis in a week with Mark Gasol. So talk about what you're seeing from Clint, and also explain your reservations with Nene.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I don't have any ill will towards Nene. Yeah. Many fans think I hate him. I don't. I just think he's fine as a backup, and as a starter, I just think he's past his prime. He's, you know, he's getting up there in age. He's not as quick as he used to be. He's not as good defensively as he used to be, and closing games with him, that can really be a problem because the opposing teams are smart. They take advantage of that kind of stuff, and I just think it's like, especially the offensive regression you get from Capella to Nene. I mean, Capella's just such a better role man than Nene. I think you have to ride it out with him. And with the key thing with young guys like Capella is, like, you have to keep his confidence level high. He's that type of player. When you play him more minutes, his numbers tend to get better. Even from the free throw line, you kind of see that. Like, last year he didn't play that many minutes, shot like 35% from the free throw line. This year he's shooting 50%, and his minutes have gone up. I don't think that's a coincidence. He's very much a rhythm player, and to keep his confidence level riding high, you have to keep his minutes up. And I think defensively, yeah, he does have a lot to work to do rip protection-wise, and he's not there strength-wise. And on the boards, I'd like him to get better, but still, all around, I just think he's the better player than Nene. And especially for this Rockets team, likes to run a lot. He really runs the floor like a gazelle, and Nene, he's just not the same guy anymore. He can't do that. Can't do that same stuff anymore. Yeah. As far as Harrell, I'm really impressed with him. I didn't think he'd see the floor at all this year, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And he's seen the floor, and he's done a good job in the spot minutes that he's been given. And I think I'm really surprised that Mike D'Antoni's playing him as much as he has, to be honest. I didn't think Mike D'Antoni played young guys at all, and now we're seeing that that's not the case. You know, if you play well for Mike D'Antoni, he'll give you minutes. I think when you split the minutes up between those three guys, I think they're fine. They need to get better on the boards a little bit, particularly on the defensive glass, but I think they're fine. I think that combination of those three guys is good enough. I just think when you put them in the game is important. Like, you have to close games with Capella, and that's just an opinion that I have. Perhaps that all changes when Demo eventually returns, assuming he does return, because he's a big factor in all of this. He's really, obviously, a really skilled guy. Defensively, he doesn't get the credit he's due. He's a really good rim protector, really smart passer. So it's interesting. I think they're fine at the center position. I think Capella still has a lot of room to grow. But yeah, I think they're fine. I'm not overly concerned about it.
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm just a little apprehensive with trying to play three. We heard Mike D'Antoni say at the beginning of this week, you know, it was so tough to play three centers, and yet that's what he's doing, and I think that's a testament to Montrezl Harrell. One area I would disagree with you a little bit, I do think there are some matchups, like the Boston game, where you can close with Harrell instead of Capella. One thing that really, you know, a point I've started noticing a lot more, the Rockets can switch every position when Harrell is on the floor so well. And so that does get them a little bit of versatility. You can't do it in every matchup, because there are going to be some where Harrell just doesn't have the length to compete. But I think it's an intriguing matchup, and certainly his energy tonight. Capella was only a +4. I don't think it was all that he played that terribly. I think, you know, when the Rockets, they let that lead slip to 15 at the beginning of the third, and they wanted some more energy. They went to Montrezl Harrell, and, you know, he was partially, he played well, but he was also the beneficiary of just being on the floor when the Rockets started making a lot of threes again. Harrell was certainly okay tonight, 4 of 6, 9 points, 4 rebounds in his 16 minutes. But going ahead, I do wonder if you're playing all three of those guys, then inherently it's going to be tough for anybody to even crack 20 minutes, much less 25. And so, and we're not even talking about Monty Unis yet. We'll get to him in just a moment to kind of close out the show. But for now, I'm wondering if, you know, a game like this, as long as you're winning, yeah, it's all good. But big picture, my personal hope is that D'Antoni is open to giving Montrez or Nene an occasional DNP CD, the do not play coach's decision, because I do worry some of these games, if Capella gets yanked so early, part of its confidence and part of its rhythm, there might be some matchups, especially against upper echelon guys, that if you're playing all of these guys basically, you know, averaging out 16 minutes apiece, that it's tough for anybody to get into, you know, much of a rhythm. Is that a fair concern at all?
Yeah, I do think that's a fair concern. Playing three guys at one position can be difficult, especially if they're all performing well. I agree with your point about Harrell. I think there's stretches where you can close games with him because he is quick enough to handle defensive assignments that I think Nene can't handle. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fine. I think You have to keep one of those guys to around 10 minutes a game. And I think at the end of the day, Nene is probably going to be the odd man out. And if you get a Monty Unis addition soon, I think you're going to see a lot more DNP CDs for Nene. And I think Harrell is showing he's earned a spot in this rotation over Nene. And I just think, you know, I get Mike D'Antoni trusts veteran leadership, and I get that he tends to lean on his vets a little bit more than he leans on the young guys. But I just think, you know, when you have better players there, you shouldn't be playing, you know, inferior players just because they're veterans.
Yeah. You mentioned the name Monty Unis. We're going to get there. We're now in the standoff for, well, basically 100 hours plus with no resolution in sight. Friday, they had a deal, although the Rockets did not officially announce the deal, and we now know why that's relevant, because Saturday, they sent him home, and so all we've heard since then is that the Rockets are in dialogue with his representation. That means B.J. Armstrong and the NBA. Because it's not a trade, there's no strict timetable. If it's a trade, you have that 72-hour mark, because, well, if the trade's not going to go through, the other team needs their players back, and everybody has to move on. With this, it's a little more delicate, and since they're in communication with the league office, I'm going to assume that there's no strict timeline here. Solomon, I'm going to throw out my theory. This is not based on anything I've heard. This is just my theory as to what might be going on, and I'm curious your take on it. For me personally, I don't think this is as simple as a failed physical. Because to me, first off, Monty Unis has said it's not a medical issue. Now, obviously, he would have some reason to distort it a little bit. But beyond that, if it's a matter of physical, either you pass or you don't. And if it's a matter, if they were not comfortable with the results, you could void the contract. Also, as far as further consultation, it wouldn't necessarily be with Monty Unis' representation in the league. The consultation would be with other, you know, doctors in Houston, and it wouldn't take more than a couple of days. It'd be a matter of looking at the physical, looking at the MRI if they did one, et cetera, et cetera. The longer this goes, of course I know that they leaked it as a physical, but, you know, that's just kind of a neat way to tie it up with a bow because, well, he's not officially under contract, so they couldn't have him with the team on Saturday working out. He had to go home. That's just the league rule. That's the way the collective bargaining agreement goes. But the longer this goes, the less I think it's just a simple issue of, well, you know, is he healthy or not? And to me, it now feels like there's something in the contract that is in dispute. And for me, again, this is all speculation. What I'm wondering about is if it might be tied to the medical side of the contract. We heard from David Pick, a renowned source for European players, that part of the bonus scheme was tied to Monty Unis going through 4 body scans a year, I believe. And so what I'm wondering is maybe there's some kind of medical situation. The Rockets are looking for certain periodic checks from Monty Unis that maybe a normal player doesn't have to do, and that's why he's objecting. Again, I'm thinking out loud here. I don't have any particulars. No one does. Daryl Morey's been incredibly tight-lipped about it. But to me, the longer this goes on, just my sense from being around and watching situations like this, I don't think it's just as simple as a dispute over a physical. Where are you at on this?
This is a really delicate situation because, I'm not a doctor, so I mean, I wouldn't know, but I've never seen a situation like this before in the NBA, and the more you talk to people, the more you get the sense that, you know, nobody really knows what the end result's going to be here. His agents handled things very strange. B.J. Armstrong, the new contract they renegotiated, in my opinion, is an inferior contract than the one that the Rockets went ahead and matched on. Because he doesn't get as much financial security in that second year. That second year is non-guaranteed. And so the Rockets could basically cut bait with him and trade him within 90 days. Well, technically, since that 90 days goes past the trade deadline, they can trade him in free agency if they wanted to get rid of him. And so I was really concerned for Monty Unis on the new contract that they renegotiated because it's not player friendly at all. The Rockets, that's very, very team friendly. That contract that they signed him to, 3 years non-guaranteed, and the only year that's going to be guaranteed is this year for $6 million, I believe. And basically, there's going to be a whole bunch of play. You know, as you mentioned, the checks, the for body fat, the body fat checks, and you know, various other things. It's weird. I'd probably say I'm probably going to trust what everybody else has to say. Like, I'm guessing that it has something to do with his back, because this is two physicals in the span of a year that Monty Unis has failed. You know, as you remember, in that Detroit Vito trade, he apparently failed that physical.
Yeah.
And although a lot of us were skeptical about it, with this new information that we have of him failing this physical, I mean, is it fair to raise the question that maybe his back isn't where we thought
it
was?
Well, to be clear, we don't know 100% that he failed, because they haven't issued a statement that, you know, we're just putting two and two together if they're seeking more information. I'm just wondering, because to me, you spoke to how incredibly team-friendly that contract is, and you're right, but it's that because there's no long-term commitment, literally, they're just paying him $8 million, and they could cut him loose in July. He has no impact on their future flexibility. I can't imagine, I mean, it's not impossible, but just for $8 million 1 year, I can't imagine his back being so bad that, you know, they wouldn't even want to pay him $8 million for 1 year, which is essentially all the contract is right now. Yet him being healthy enough to pass the Brooklyn physical, to want to work out, all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying his physical came back 100% clean. I'm just curious if there might be, and again, we're just speculating here, there might be a little, you know, an extra layer to it than we all know. Because the longer this drags on, you know, to me, it raises more red flags. It's like, it's not even just a simple physical, because the Pistons, you know, yeah, they decided within a couple of days. They consulted their doctors and the trade was vetoed. With this going on 5-6 days, you wonder if there's something, you know, the physical is certainly part of it, I'll buy that, but you wonder if there's something in that contract that's, you know, becoming a little bit problematic as well. Salman, I want to turn back to close out happy things. One stat that I should have mentioned tonight that I did not. The Rockets, playing so much better defense in addition to everything else, have now held opponents below 50 first half points in each of the past four games. First 22 games, they did it just five times. So clear uptick on that end of the floor. Did have a regression in the second half against Brooklyn, but certainly they took care of it tonight against the Sacramento Kings. Gave up 31 points in the fourth quarter with their second, third stringers, which deflated the overall defensive efficiency a little bit. But by and large, still a good night for the Rockets on both ends of the court. Turning to the next week, it is going to get tougher. You have one more that's kind of soft home game against the Pelicans on Friday, then at Minnesota, home for San Antonio. They do have one at Phoenix, which they should be favored in, and then at Memphis on the 23rd. So of that stretch, where do you think, where does the streak end? Or does it? Just curious your prediction.
I feel like that Minnesota game is going to be a little bit tougher than expected. Yeah, because, again, that's a well-coached team on the road. And I think you know, with the Rockets being on the road after a while, after a long home stretch, that might be a little bit of a wake-up call. But, again, I have no idea. They have shown no signs of slowing down. The Rockets are, like, fifth in point differential at this point, which is pretty insane, because point differential after net rating is the second best indicator for playoff success. So, you know, now we're gonna have to have a conversation soon about whether or not this is just a scrappy playoff team. Is this a dark horse to be in the Western Conference Finals? Like, is that a possibility for this team? Because that road stretch does sound it does sound like the Rockets could lose a game to the Spurs at home. That does sound like another game they could lose. I would tend to think that they'd win that Phoenix game, because I just think the Suns are really bad this year. Yeah. And especially that defense, I think the Rockets will be able to take advantage of that defense, no problem. But yeah, I would if there was a game to be suspicious about, I'd say that first game against the Timberwolves, because I think the Timberwolves are a little bit better than their record indicates.
They're better than their record. They also have Karl Anthony Towns, who is, you know, it's kind of physical matchup that Capella's has kind of struggled with a little. And it's the second night of a back-to-back. You're on the road, though that is tricky. Now, the Rockets have handled their back-to-backs pretty well. Second night in Denver, second night home against Dallas. But Denver and Dallas, those are bad teams. Second night of a back-to-back, when you're going on the road to Minnesota. That is a pretty long flight from Houston to Minnesota. The low is going to be minus 23. I know that from talking to seemingly everyone around the Rockets is dreading that trip for that reason. Nobody wants to be in a, even if you're indoors, when it's freaking minus 23 when you step outside. That's ridiculous. But, you know, between Capella's length, the travel, the road back-to-back, that does worry me. Even if the Rockets are a very good team, that's a losable game. But they're 8 in a row now. Worry about that Saturday night. They're 8 in a row now. They've got a damn good shot to get to 9 in a row home on Friday against New Orleans. So there's a lot of positive things to be about excited about with the Rockets these days. If you win that New Orleans game, hell, you'll be over a 60-win pace. So kind of chew on that for a little bit. Solomon, thank you so much for joining.
Ben, can I ask you a question before we leave?
Oh, yeah.
How good do you think this Rockets team is? Because, you know, I'm struggling right now. I'm trying to readjust my expectations for this team. I didn't think they'd be this good this quickly. And right now, I'm thinking about if I should consider them a dark horse for, you know, a contender. Like, is that, am I being crazy there? Like, how, what about, what's your thoughts on this?
Yes and no. What I will say, I think they are, they're close enough to call a contender in the sense that they're close enough to be one, potentially one move away at the deadline. And that deadline move doesn't even necessarily have to be a star-level player. And that is way closer than I thought in, say, late October. If you'd asked me in late October, could the Rockets win a championship this year, under what circumstances? First, I would say probably never. But the only circumstance, well, if somehow there was a superstar, there's the perfect storm that the superstar wanted out, and then he kind of leveraged his way to Houston, and then maybe if things clicked just perfect. If I do think it's a little bit fool's gold, like, you know, they might can win 60 games, but I think the style at which they play is perfect for the regular season. I think playing that up-tempo, that fast, shooting that well from the perimeter, you can overwhelm a lot of teams, like they've done with the Kings and Lakers in the past week, to an extent, Dallas. Certainly, you know, in the playoffs when things slow down, Utah worries me a little bit, but obviously, especially the Warriors, you know, I don't see them on that level. However, even if it's slightly artificially high, you know, you could say that this team with their depth, with their pace, is especially well suited for the regular season. If you're a 55 to 60 win team, which I do think that's legitimate because you look at the metrics, as you said, there's nothing that indicates that they've been lucky at all. They deserve where they are. You're close enough to where, boy, you know, the Rockets are not going to sell the farm in February because they're also set up well to have flexibility in the offseason. So I don't think Daryl Morey is going to make a deal just to make a deal. If he can wait until the summer, I think he will. But boy, I mean, I think now, assuming this continues and assuming no major injuries, the one thing I will point out, but the Rockets are so dependent on Harden. They are much more dependent on one player than anybody else is. So, you know, he's been remarkably durable, but all it takes is, you know, one, you know, awkward fall in a game, and all of a sudden, you know, this thing could, you know, you could lose a lot of games in a hurry. But
don't jinx us,
yeah, I know. I just, that's the ultimate knock on wood. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they're close enough to where February could be real, real interesting. Going into this year, I would never said expect Daryl Morey to be quiet, but I think he would have just gladly taken 50 wins this year, maybe a minor trade, the deadline if he can make it. But basically, unless an unexpected scenario happens, save the major moves for the offseason. I think you're close enough now. You do need a little bit more, especially on the interior. I think there are fair questions, like after the Brooklyn game, of, you know, you have a lot of pretty good options inside, but nothing that consistent. Clearly, you'd like another all-star level player, preferably someone that can play the four or five position, but they're close enough now to where I would say February becomes a lot more interesting than it seemed 2 months ago. Is that fair?
Yeah, and it's tricky again because, as you said, they've hit a lot of luck in that they haven't had injuries yet. I mean, they've had one injury to Patrick Beverley. Unfortunately enough, they survived it. But I mean, rather than that, they've been fairly lucky on that end. But at the same time, they've had a really hard road schedule, and that's really important to keep in mind because, you know, this is something I talked to Forrest Walker about a lot. You know, overachieving is a real thing in the NBA, and that's something that I think the Rockets probably did in 2014-15. But at the same time, if you look at all the metrics, I don't think they're overachieving this year. I think they're actually this good, and what the question is, you know, what is this good? You know, yeah. like, is this good, you know, a second round out? Is this good a, you know, potential conference finalist? You know, that's something I'm still struggling to figure out.
Yeah.
And it's going to be real interesting because, as you said, we're getting closer and closer to that February trade deadline. And if the Rockets make one, you know, pesky move here or there, I mean, we've been talking about how good their young guys have been, like Sam Decker, Montrezl Harrell, Clint Capella.
Yeah.
If they can manage to put together a package with a high enough salary contract, I don't think they're completely, and this is something I talked with Paul about, I don't think they're completely out of the trade hunt for a superstar.
No.
And that might be a little bit of a hot take, but
no,
I don't think so either.
If you look at their
young assets and they have all their draft picks, I don't think it's crazy to say that they're completely out of the hunt for a superstar. Now, maybe I'm being a little bit more optimistic on the Rockets young players than most people, but I mean, look how good Sam Decker's been. I mean, he's been phenomenal, and I didn't think he'd be this good, and I don't think the Rockets thought he'd be this good either. And so if you evaluate, look up and down the roster, and you look at Clint Capella, who we think is a starting caliber center, I mean, is it fair to say that maybe another team thinks that?
Yeah.
If another team thinks that, you can put him in a trade. And it's really interesting. I'm fascinated by the direction of this team. Obviously, they're doing well right now, and that's all you can ask for. It's been good talking to you, Ben.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, to be clear, I don't think they're overachieving at all now. What I mean, it's just, you know, sometimes regular season win totals are not, you know, a perfect parallel to playoff performance. But no, I mean, right now they're not overachieving at all. You know, they're on pace to win 60 games, and right now they have the efficiency of a 60-win team. You know, there's nothing soft about what they've done. I mean, they go out against opponents like the Kings and Lakers in the past week and just overwhelm them. But yeah, as far as the stuff of the deadline, I was talking with some people tonight. Now, not Daryl Morey, not actual decision makers in the Rockets front office, but I was talking with some people at Toyota Center tonight, you know, around the team, and you talk about some of these young players, and let's say the Kings, let's say, because clearly there's some dysfunction there, let's say this is the year that they finally move on from DeMarcus Cousins. You look at a package headlined by Clint Capella, Sam Decker, you throw in a future first-round draft pick. Now, obviously, there's a lot of salary matching that would have to go in any kind of deal. I'm aware of that. I'm just talking. I'm just talking young
people. You have to include that Ryan Anderson contract if you want to make the salaries work.
Well, and Sacramento actually did go after Ryan Anderson in the offseason, by the way. But
good point.
Yeah, and he's from there. But yeah, that's just an example of a team. You know, all of a sudden, you throw in the likes of Clint Capella, Sam Decker, a first-round pick. Now, I'm not saying they should give all of that in any one particular package. What I'm saying is that the Rockets are not assetless. You know, they're not maybe the Boston Celtics. They're not sitting on like 3-4 future first-round picks or young prospects.
Yeah, sure.
But they're close enough to be in the conversation. And the tricky thing about this, Salman, you follow the NBA just like I do. If you're close enough to be in the conversation, things have a funny way of happening. It's kind of like, you know, we've seen so many of these trades. Like, I think back to Dwight Howard and the Lakers back in 2012. Stars have a way of getting what they want, because even if they're not, you know, literally a free agent that year, their leverage, if they're happy, what they're going to do, they exert a lot of power. So if the Rockets, if they continue to win and they have these young assets, it's enough to be in the conversation. And all of a sudden, if you're in the conversation, it doesn't take much to where, you know, maybe you start having a few rumors, and then that team, they, you know, or that player, I should say, tries to work things behind the scenes in the favor of Houston. So, you know, they're not in the forefront in terms of assets, but it's close enough. The team is close enough to 60, and, you know, they're close enough in terms of assets that, like I said, this January, February, all of a sudden, it can be pretty damn interesting. Salman, thank you so much for the time. I know we went over, but yeah, this was good. I mean, this is a good night to kind of reflect with the Rockets 19-7, 8 in a row. Thank you for joining us as always. Toss out your Twitter handle, your website, basically anything you want to tell our listeners here at Locked On Rockets to find you at.
Yeah, sure. My Twitter handle is at Red Nation Hoops. You can find all our work at rednationhoops.com. We've had a lot of great content this week, so you guys should really go check that out. We host a podcast every week, the Red Nation Hoops podcast, as part of the Almighty Ballin' Podcast Network. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Yep. Salman, thank you so much for the time, and I'm sure we'll be chatting with you again soon, okay?
All right, take care, Ben.
You too. That was Salman Ali, managing editor of Red Nation Hoops. really, I don't think I can say it any better than he did. Rockets are in a very good spot to where I think all of us need to start readjusting our expectations, and that's a very happy place to wrap up this episode. Thanks to all you guys for listening. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. It's Locked On Rockets. Follow the show at Locked On Rockets. You can also email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com if you've got questions for me, or if you would like to inquire about becoming a potential sponsor, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, use that promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate on your first purchase from SeatGeek. Again, happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 132, Kings 98. Rockets now 19-7 in the year, winners 8 in a row. Back in action Friday night against the Pelicans to close out the 4-game homestand at Toyota Center. Enjoy your evening, and I will talk to you again before that game Friday night.